All right. So this week the recorder is going. I'm watching it. We are on Parshas Chayei Sarah, and like I said in the email, I'm going to try to, I think, blend the outline of the parsha with the ideas that we're not going to. It won't be one of these weeks that we've had the last couple of weeks where we spend half an hour on the introduction and then half an hour doing a 1 hour topic, because that doesn't really work. And fortunately, Chayei Sarah is actually an easy time to do this, because Chayei Sarah is basically a three-story parsha. Unlike Lech Lecha Vayera, where there are 100 things going on, it's a very straightforward parsha. It begins with Sarah's death, and the burial of Sarah buying Aras HaMachpelah, and that whole negotiation with Ephron. Then Abraham tells Eliezer, I want you to go get a wife for Yitzchak. I'm not interested in him marrying somebody local. I want you to go to the family off in Aram. And he goes off and he meets with, Besuel is the father of the family, but he disappears in the middle of the story. Laban is the one who takes over, and he ends up getting Laban's sister, Rivka, who says, yes, I want to go. And the whole story at the well with the camels, right? We give the water. The story is basically familiar. He wants the one who will give water for himself as well as for the camels, which is what Rivka does. And then he brings her back and brings her to Yitzchak. And then the end of the parsha is, by the way, Abraham got married again to a woman named Keturah. He has a bunch of kids. And he says they're not going to inherit with Yitzchak. He sends them off on their own and gives them gifts. And that's the end of the parsha. That's basically what Chayei Sarah is. It's really three stories. It's burial of Sarah, getting Rivka, and the end of Abraham's life. Clear? Straightforward? That was an easy outline.
Yeah.
But now we're going to have to go back over it because there's an awful lot to ask. And the first one is a question that we already noted last time. Look in the beginning of Chayei Sarah. Danielle, I think are there chumashim?
Yes. Does anyone want tea?
So, we start out being told that Sarah dies at the age of 127. And she dies, second pasuk in the parasha, Vatama Sarah b'kiryas arba hi chevron be'eretz kinah. Sarah dies in Kiryas Arba, which is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. By Abraham, Lispola Sarah Valiv Kosa. And Abraham comes to eulogize Sarah and to cry for her. And then we get the story of the burial after that. What questions do you have on that pasuk of, and Sarah died in Kiryas Arba, he Hebron, and so on? That pasuk base there, that second pasuk. What are the problems here?
What is that to you?
It is. Well, Kiryas Arba, he Hebron. Okay.
She Be'er Sheva.
So one problem is that when last we saw Abraham, after the Akedah, it said, Vayeshev Abram Be'er Sheva. Abram was living in Be'er Sheva. So if Abram's in Be'er Sheva, why is Sarah dying in Hebron? That's one problem. What else? Right. That it says by Abraham, where was Abraham coming from? Why wasn't he at her bedside? So that's its own question going along with this Be'er Sheva Hebron question. And then a separate problem, the identification of the place, aside from the fact that we get multiple names, Kiryat Arba Hi Hebron, Be'eretz Kenan, as opposed to where? We know Hebron. We were introduced to Hebron and Lech Lecha. They live there. Why do you need to tell me Hebron that is in Eretz Canaan specifically? I already knew that. Abram and Sarah lived there until stone was destroyed, and then they moved. So we have really three questions, which you can sandwich into two. One is that it's clear that Abram wasn't there, and the question of why is she in Hebron and he not in Hebron, potentially in Be'er Sheva. And then the separate question of Hebron in Canaan. Especially, I mean, you don't have to subscribe to this, but especially if you accept the view within the Medrash that the death of Sarah is right after the Akedah. Right? Remember that the Akedah, this is always one of the things that causes problems for people. The fact that the the fact that we have parsha breaks where we do, it sort of confuses the flow of things from one parsha to the next. It sort of feels like, well, that was this week and this is next week and there's some kind of a gap in between. But if you read it in a Chumash, of course, there's no such gap. So we have the Akedah. Avram goes back to live in Beersheba. We don't know where Yitzchak is. It doesn't say anything. Then Avram gets news about the birth of Nachor's descendants, which includes Rivka. And then Sarah dies. So the Medrash assumes that Sarah's death is associated with the Akedah, right? The whole story about the Satan showing her what's going on and not telling her that he's alive. But if I accept that chronology, right, which is the same chronology that leads to the idea that Yitzchak is 37 at the time of the Akedah and that Sarah is, you know, 3 years old, right? That's all part of the same... That the reason for that Medrash is because we know that Sarah dies at the age of 127, and Yitzchak was born when she was 90, right? So that means that if the Akedah happens when Sarah dies, he's 37 at the time of the Akedah. But that means that the little interlude in between, that Abraham finds out that Nahor has children, including Rivka, is happening right then. And if that's true, then Rivka is born at the Akedah. We know Yitzchak is 40 when he gets married, because the Torah says so. So she must be 3 at the time of the marriage. That's the way that math works. There are all sorts of reasons why you don't need to buy that math.
She could have been born earlier and just found that.
Not only that, it makes a lot more sense, because if you look at the end of Parshas Vayera, we don't just find out about Rivka's birth. We find out about a whole bunch of other kids being born. It's not as though they were all born simultaneously. So that's number one. Number two, you don't have to pin the death of Sarah on the Akedah. Really, those stories happen here, here, and here. You know, we're assuming that they're all lumped together, but it doesn't necessarily have to be so. And there is indeed another version in the Medrash, which says that, no, Rivka's a teenager at this point. It's not. Don't read the chronology in that way, and therefore Yitzchak doesn't have to be 37 at the time of the Akedah either. It can be a little bit younger. Not that that helps him, but as part of this whole storyline. But I don't want to get stuck on the age question. Because the real question is, if you were to take that view, that all these things are happening together, then I really don't understand why she was in Hebron. Avram went from Beersheba to the Akedah, and he went back to Beersheba. Why in the world would she be in Hebron? So I brought you on the sheet Rabbi Ephraim Karo. Rabbi Ephraim Karo's father is more famous. He is Rabbi Yosef Karo, correct? Author of the Shulchan Aruch. So this is the son of the author of the Shulchan Aruch. And if you take a look at number one, you see the piece that I brought here, She'eretz Yisrael mechaperes avon. He's explaining why Sarah went to Hebron to die. She was living in Beersheba, and then she went to Hebron. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael atones for sin. Ulefichach, kishi hergisha ba'atzma afisas hakochos v'yisron hachulsha. When she realized that she was losing her strength, she was becoming weak, v'yad'ash lo tarich yamim, she knew she wasn't going to live long, tzivsa sheyolichu ha lechebron, lamuz sham. She said, bring me to Hebron to die there. Ulezeh amar be'eretz Kanaan. And that's why it says that it was in Hebron, in the land of Canaan. Not because I don't know where Hebron is, but in order to emphasize that's why she was there. She was in Hebron because she wanted to be Be'eretz Canaan. Ulazeh v'yavo Avraham mi Be'er Sheva shehi Eretz Plishtim ve'ena Eretz Canaan. And that's why it has to say Avram came from Be'er Sheva, because Be'er Sheva is the land of the Plishtim and not Eretz Canaan.
Be'er Sheva's not in the real
land. Eretz Canaan.
Isn't that what it sounds like? Beersheba, it sounds like he is saying, is not part of Israel. Uh-oh. That's a problem. Don't let the world find that out. So there are other answers to the problem of why she is in Hebron and he's in Beersheba. If you look at Ramban, the Nitziv, there are other answers that are offered. But his answer is she wants to die in Eretz Yisrael, where there is greater Kedusha. Now, I should note, you have to watch his wording carefully. He begins with Eretz Yisrael mechaperet avon. But then he continues to talk about Canaan. Eretz Canaan and Eretz Yisrael are not synonymous. Eretz Canaan, think back to Parashas Noach, is the land of a person by the name of Canaan, who has particular descendants. And they don't spread throughout what we think of as Eretz Yisrael. They only stay in the area near the Jordan. If you remember the geography, Canaan is the area near the Yarden. The area to the west, towards the Mediterranean, and particularly the southern area, ends up being settled by the Plishtim, right? The sea peoples who come into the land. So what you really have is Eretz Plishtim in the south and west, and Eretz Canaan in the east and to the north. And so what you don't necessarily have to assume that these other areas are not Eretz Yisrael, they're just not Eretz Canaan. However, that's not where he's going with it. What he is claiming is there is greater Kedusha in Hebron than in Beersheba, and that's where she wants to be when she dies. You're familiar, of course, with the idea of dying in Israel, being buried in Israel. The Gemara at the end of Ksuvos talks about it. Yes, the Gemara also says better to live there than to die there. Nonetheless, she says when she feels that time is coming, that's where she wants to go.
How did she even know about Hebron?
What do you mean? They lived there originally.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They lived there in Lech Lecha. Yeah. They were there in Lech Lecha. Into the beginning of Vayera. Avram moved to Beersheba after Stone was destroyed.
Okay. So they're saying that she went by herself without Avraham to die there?
Correct. Avram doesn't go with her. Avram stays in Beersheba.
Why?
So that's what I want to talk about.
Does Avram know that the Kedusha is much stronger in Hebron as opposed to Beersheba, which is part of Plishtim?
I believe so.
So why would
so that's where we have to go with this. So first I wanted to just show you that Rabbi Ephraim Karo is not inventing this. Others say this as well, including Rashi. Rashi is talking about something different, something that's in Parshas Toldos. So you get a heads up for the following week's Parsha as well. In Toldos, Yitzchak plants things. He plants grain outside of Gerar, right? After he goes through his own adventure with Abimelech and the Plishtim, he settles outside of Gerar, and he plants, and we're told that he has results that are just miraculous. 100-fold returns on what he plants. And it says, Vayimtzav ba'aretz ha'hi, he found in that land, me'asha'arim, 100-fold return on his investment. And Rashi picks up on that ba'aretz ha'hi. If you take a look at the second source, afal pi she'eina chashuva ke'aretz Yisrael atzma, even though that land, which is again that same southern area, Gerar Beersheba, very close together, even though that land is not as great as Eretz Yisrael, Keretz Shiva Goyim, like the land of the seven nations, which means the Kanani nations. So yeah, it's always been there in Rashi and Chumash. It's not, you know, if you learn Rashi on the Parsha, you'll see already this distinction. This Gemara in Ksuvos Kufiyot that also makes this association when David is forced to be outside of Eretz Yisrael. He says, Gerashta osi meistapeach klap meistapeach tachas kanfei ha-shechina. He says, I've been chased out from being with the Shechina, now I'm off in the land of the Plishtim. So David HaMelech says it as well. There's a Ramban actually in our Parsha on Chevron Be'eretz Canaan that seems to say it.
So what are the borders? Like what are the...
Right, so the borders are wherever Canaan was. Well, right now it sounds like it's a difference between where the Canaanim were and where the Plishtim were. But it's not, as you'll see in a second. We're actually going to change that. With the Gemara in Bava Basra. Take a look at source number 3. The Gemara in Bava Basra is talking about how one acquires land, what one has to do in order to make it his own. And it's linked to what Avraham did. So that... The Gemara says, "Halach bala orka ulurach ba kana mekom hilucho." Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, "When you walk the dimensions of your land, that's how you acquire it." And the Chachamim say, "No, ein hiluch mo'aklum achi yachzik." They say, "No, walking is ineffective. You have to take control. Taking control means like you fence it in. You do something that demonstrates ownership." And then the Gemara goes on. I didn't bring you the full piece, but Rabbi Eliezer learns this from Avraham. Because kum hisalech ba'aretz le'orka ulerach ba kilacha etnena, Hashem said to him, "Alech lecha, walk the length and width of the land. I'm going to give it to you." He says, "Yeah, that's literally. When you walk the land, that's when you are going to acquire it." And so, what's going on here is that Avram and Sarah spend their initial years in the land of Canaan, based in Hebron, but they also Beit-El, different areas there. And at that point, they take control of the land there, and that invests it with Kedusha. But what's going to happen with the south? How is the south going to gain Kedusha? And so Avraham moves to Beersheba in order to settle it and invest it with Kedusha. That's the goal. But it doesn't work. The reason it doesn't, why doesn't it work?
He's not with Sarah.
That would be nice, but no. And Sarah is there initially, because we know that he goes to Gerar and he gets in trouble with Avimelech. Sarah did go. Sarah, there's another nice thing with Sarah, though, later, don't worry. But we see Abraham try it. Remember they plant the Eshel? Right? Vayitha Eshel viv Er Sheva. He plants an Eshel. Vayikra Sham b'shem Hashem kel olam. And he called out in the name of Hashem, which the Medrash explains means he is actively trying to teach people about God. That's his attempt to bring Kedusha to Be'er Sheva. That's what Avram and Sarah at that stage are trying to do. The problem is they run into Avimelech. And Avimelech is not willing to cede control to Avraham. Whereas, if you look in the beginning of Chaye Sarah, the way the Chiti talk to Avraham, they view him as a resident. Nisi Elohim Ata B'Socheinu. Right? You are a prince of God in our midst. They love Avraham. Avraham drives a hard bargain, but they love Avraham. Avimelech, on the other hand, doesn't like him at all and keeps trying to kick him out and move him along. That goes on with Yitzchak as well, the filling of the wells. It doesn't work. The attempt is an ongoing attempt to try to bring Kedusha to the land, and Avraham, after the Akedah, goes back to try to do that. Sarah is there with him until she feels like she's becoming weak and she's reaching the end. She goes back to their original home in Hebron, and Avraham apparently stays in Be'er Sheva. And whether it's because he doesn't really believe she's going to die, and therefore he feels like, well, let me continue my work and I'll make it back, or whether there's some agreement between them that this is more important and he has to continue the work of creating Kedusha, I don't know. No one who discusses this, and this is discussed by many, the Yeshua's Malko in Yerodea talks about it. It's not my original idea. But one way or another, he stays with this mission of bringing holiness to the land, and she goes back to Hebron, she dies in Hebron, and that's why Abram has to show up after she's passed away in order to grieve for her. I would assume that if she's feeling weak, and we know that they have avadim, they have servants, so presumably, you know, some of them are with her. What the numbers are, who would be with her, I don't know.
But then it must take so long to bury her, because it takes Aaron so long to get there.
There must be some period of time. I mean, we know he eulogizes her first before going to get the keter. And it takes time to travel from Be'er Sheva to Hebron.
So she's left for so long.
I mean, left in what sense?
She's not buried yet.
In the sense of not being buried. Yeah. Sorry.
Totally gets the message and gets back. And
yeah.
At what point, sorry, this is like maybe like sort of an offshoot, but like the immediacy of burial, when does that come into?
So immediacy of burial is a classic Jewish idea. I mean, the Torah itself has the command of, even if someone is executed by a Beis Din, which requires that this person be a hardened criminal, for all sorts of reasons, like execution is a very difficult thing in halacha to actually end up carrying out, even still, the Torah says, bury them same day. It's a disgrace to not bury on the same day. So it's a very old idea for us.
But this is before them, so.
Yeah, no, this is before them.
But
I think the concept is older than the pasuk about burial. I think so. I think it will be viewed as something that, in general, burying the person sooner rather than later avoids disgrace for them. It's a matter of honor for them. I think that this isn't the ideal. This isn't what's supposed to happen. Right, so,
and she didn't have time to give a bracha, she didn't have time to say goodbye, she didn't have time, she was alone.
So we know nothing at all about whether Sarah knew about the Akedah or not. We have the Medrash that makes that association, but before you got here, we were talking about this question of whether that has to be the way the Psukim are read, and the fact that there are other Midrashim that read it differently. It's not clear at all. What we do know is that the Psukim indicate that Abraham goes back to Be'er Sheva, doesn't say where Yitzhak went.
Right, and Yitzhak doesn't come, and does he have to sit Shiva? Does he know?
We have no information.
No.
What does
Avram
sit Shiva for?
We know he mourns for her. Yaakov sits for Yosef. But Yosef is alive. But the
that's where the concept of sitting Shiva came from.
Well, actually, I'm sorry. Vayas Aviv, Evel Shivas Yemim. It's Yosef for Yaakov. Yosef does a 7-day Shiva of sorts for.
Is that where it stems from?
I mean, that's one possible source for it. know, that's certainly biblical precedent.
Yitzchak did not sit Shiva.
Well, Avram with Terach, we don't know, because Avram leaves town before Terach is dead. Right, that's true. But we don't get anything. The Torah doesn't say. It does describe eulogizing crying. It doesn't describe Shiva. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. But I brought this in the beginning so that we could do other stuff afterwards that would, you know, a little bit better. Yeah. Sarah does not have an easy time of it. That's for sure. The second story that we have is sending Yitzchak to get Eliezer. So this is something that's fascinating. Everyone who reads Chayei Sara is always struck by the real estate given to the story of this marriage. Right? How many pesukim do we have describing the courtship of Avram and Sarah? We have one pasuk that says he married her. That's it. The end of Parshas Noach, one pasuk saying that he married Yiscah, who is Sarah. How much time do we spend on Yaakov marrying Rachel and Leah? A period that took 7 years.
And 14.
And then, right, the whole... Those 7 years are after. He marries both of them between the sevens. It's a common mystery that the people do. When we get to Vayetze, maybe we'll talk about it. But he 7 years to think he's marrying Rachel. He marries Leah. Then wait 1 week, which is given at the origin of Shavah Brachos. And then after the week, he marries Rachel and then has to work another 7 years. That's the system. So... either way, this whole thing is something like 30-something psukim. Somewhere close to 40 psukim for that whole thing. This is 67. 67 psukim for Eliezer to go get Rivka. Because first he gives us his trip, right? First he gives us the deal, the negotiation with Abraham, and what do you want me to do? Oh, go over to that land? Fine, I'll go to that land. And then he encounters her at the well and has a conversation with her at the well, and Lavan goes out to greet him, and he tells Lavan the story, and he goes to the house, and he tells the entire story again from the beginning, and then they wait overnight, and then they ask Rachel, well, do you really want to go? And she says, I'm going to go. And then they go, and the whole thing is 67 psukim. Why are you spending so much time on a story that, dang, the Mabul is like 43 psukim? Like, why is this 67 psukim? So, there are a lot of answers you could give, but one thought that I had that I really like. If you take a look at Eliezer standing at the well, it is Perek Chav Dalet. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Oh, you know what? I put it on your sheet in number 4. I gave you all the references there. If you take a look at the two gracious ones that I gave you on the sheet, Chavdal Yud Aleph and Ches Yud Aleph, tell me what they have in common, and don't tell me the fact that it's Pasuk Yud Aleph. There's something in common between 8:11 and 24:11. Yep. Leis Erev. Leis Erev means?
Towards night.
Right. At the time of evening. Right? At the time of evening. So the one in 8:11 is talking about the Yonah. When the dove comes back to the boat with an olive branch, that's Leis Erev. Second one is here. Leis Erev is when Eliezer goes to the well. This will also appear, the phrase Leis Erev will also appear two other places in Tanakh. One is in Yeshaya, describing a time when Hashem is going to punish the nations who have harmed us. And the other one is in Zechariah, describing the arrival of Mashiach. V'haya Leis Erev Yehiyeh Or. 4 times when Tanakh uses Leis Erev. Each one is a crucial moment in the history of the world. When the dove comes back, right, at this point they've been in the boat for a very long time. As far as they know, and it's true, the whole world outside is dead. They don't know if God is going to actually decide to restart life. There's been no promise, right? That promise comes afterwards. They have no idea if they're ever getting off the boat. And then they send out the raven, right, to find out what's going on, and the raven just circles around and around and around and comes back. And they send out the dove the first time, and nothing doing. And they send out the dove a second time, and nothing doing. Actually, no, the second time is when they're in. This is the second one. Then there's a third after this. But the second time, they send the dove out, and they have to be wondering, is this ever going to end? Is there going to be a world? And that's what Ace Erev, this time of ambiguity. Ibn Ezra defines the word Erev in the beginning of the Chumash as a period that is neither day nor night. It's very blurred. The word in Hebrew, me'orav, right, means? Right, so a ta'aroves is a mixture, a me'orav is things that are mixed together, right? The idea of a guarantor in Hebrew is an arev. When you take responsibility for somebody else, kol Yisrael arevin, zevazeh, can either mean we are mixed up with each other or you're guarantors for each other. Also, the idea of things being sweet is arev. That's all from the same root. The Ace Erev is a time when things are ambiguous and you don't know what's going to happen. And so the dove comes back at this Ace Erev and everything suddenly resolves for the best because, oh, he has a branch. That means trees are growing. That means there's life on this planet. Now, this marriage of Rivka and Yitzchak is critical because at this point you had Abraham and Sarah and they are the ones who started this, you know, speaking to Hashem, spreading knowledge of God, but Sarah's dead. And Abraham is, at this stage, you know, minimum of 137 years old. And if Yitzhak doesn't get a wife, and Yitzhak can't leave the land, we're taught, right? He's supposed to stay in the land, and Abraham says he can't go with him. If Yitzhak can't find a proper wife, which he can't find locally, what's going to happen to the Jewish people? And not just that. The person who's going to become his wife has a critical role. Think about what Rivka ends up doing, right? Without Rivka, Esav gets the brachos. Without Rivka's intervention, alternatively, maybe Yaakov gets the brachos, then Esav kills him, right? Because it's Rivka who says, you know, get out of town. So Rivka is the linchpin in the ongoing existence of the Jewish people. Without her, it's all over. And so this is very much a Ace Erev. At this point, it's like, well, things are very vague. We don't know where things are going. And therefore, until she shows up and suddenly everything is resolved and everything works out well as the heir. And the same thing is true for the other uses of La'ez Erev, describing this moment in the future when there's going to be a great war. This is the whole Gog u'Magog idea. There's going to be this massive war against Yerushalayim. And then Zechariah says, V'haya La'ez Erev, yiyeh war. Suddenly, out of Erev, out of this time, who knows what's going to be, there will be light. So I think that's what's being picked up on, and that's why the Torah spends so much real estate on this. Because this story matters in a way that few other stories in Chumash matter. It's the key moment, the fulcrum for everything that's going to be. Okay.
Really nice.
Thanks.
Thanks for your era.
Yeah.
There's only four times in the entire Chumash.
Tanakh.
Yeah. The whole Tanakh.
That says Lay Sarah.
Really?
Yeah. That's the joy of having a CD-ROM because I can check that. Yeah, that's not just a guess. Chazal did this without the CD-ROMs.
There were more significant times as well.
I just heard a similar dress over there. Something that was a. It's four times
at the
beginning, it's at each
at
like very focal points of this Jewish nation.
Interesting, because the Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh, the classic Medrash on Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh is wrong. I shouldn't say wrong, that's not the right word to use. The classic Medrash on Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh is that it refers to something that's going to happen publicly in front of everybody to say, you can't stop this from happening. And so the Medrash mentions three times when it says Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh, but there are actually four. The Medrash talks about it. One is the beginning of the novel, right? The Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh entering the boat. One is the Bris Milah for Abraham. The one is Moshe's death.
That's right. And then one is in
Tzitzit Mitzrayim, right? Getting out.
Well, those are all like pinnacle moments of when like the nation's about to be. Like going into also a new era of like, this is going to be the new world, this is going to be the nation, this is now Kal Yisrael going into Eretz Yisrael.
But Moshe's death isn't.
Right, it is, right before they cross from the Midbar into Eretz Yisrael, and they're about to be led by Yoshua, and like, now you're on your own.
Right.
Go be a nation.
Right. Good. Good. And without a doubt, there are other times in the Chumash that I would look at and say, well, shouldn't this also get a Le'ez Erev? And then the question is, so, you know, then you have to ask yourself, okay, which other points would I list?
Mashiach.
And are they, well, this is Mashiach. Yeah, those are. This is the Zachariah one is Mashiach.
I would think that would be a time for Mashiach.
But these are different, like, I think these are more like end of an era, beginning of a new era, and other ones are more of like,
which is Mashiach. It's really footsteps, you know, Masa'at, Masimah, Levanim. So it's like footsteps for our, like, it's for generations.
Right. But the key would be, right, but when do you have a moment where if things go one way, it'll be good. If things go another way, it's going to be utter disaster, like it's all over type disaster. I would have said maybe, you know, like the selection of Moshe. Maybe the selection of Moshe at the Sneh. Maybe that's a Leis Erev type of a moment. You have to go through. It'll be an interesting list to come up with. You know, which events in Chumash are things you can't do without.
Leaving Yishmael in the house.
Maybe not.
And
maybe not.
How...
I don't know. I mean, the question you have to ask is which things really had to happen that way. And I don't. We have no way to answer that because we don't find out what would have been.
So they just...
Right. They
but you're still explaining why it has to have so much stuck in. You're saying this is a very pinnacle moment.
Right, but because it's critical, it's going to take pains to actually spell it out and make sure you realize the gravity of the moment by having you, you know, go through the whole thing.
And the gravity of a marriage in general, like that is a this sort of
right, but then I would ask, why not for the other ones?
You should have them.
No.
Because all the other repeats what happens, right?
Yes.
Time because like the whole repetition.
Correct. One other note on the beginning of this story. If you go back to Chavdalet Aleph, right after Sarah's death, right before he speaks to Eliezer, Avraham Zakein ba bayamim v'Hashem berach es Avraham bakol. It begins, and Avraham was old. Avraham is 137 years old at this stage. He was old already. He's old before this. I mean, even by Abraham's standards, he lived to be 175. Nonetheless, he's old in some sense of the term before this.
Standards, but not in the ones that lived.
No, to their standards also. Sarah called him old. Sarah said, "Vadoni Zakein," and that was decades before this happened.
Yeah, but if he lives 175, then he's not like at the end yet.
That's true, but he's not at the end now either.
Right.
He's at this stage, he's somewhere between 137 and 140. Because we know he's 140 when Yitzchak gets married. So he is, let's say he's 140 at this moment. But he was called old when he was 100. So why does it now say that he's old? So the simple read of this is that it's because it's introducing what's coming next. Because Avram was already at this age, and he felt his death might come, therefore he sent Eliezer to go find a wife, because, number one, he couldn't necessarily make the trip himself, and number two, he was worried, if he waits, what's going to happen? That's a simple read of why it says Avraham is okay. It's a setup for the story. But there's a beautiful medrash in source number 5. It's part of a longer medrash. I only brought you the key line from it. The rest of this medrash talks about Sarah and the lines of Eshes Chayil, and how the lines in Eshes Chayil all parallel elements of Sarah's life. But this one line I thought was very important. Kishemesa Sarah kavtza zikna al Avraham v'nikra zakein. Sarah's death is what ages Avraham. He can manage all the stuff he dealt with before that. He went to war. He fought God on behalf of Sodom and lost. He had the whole trouble with Yishmael and wanting to keep Yishmael, being told to kick Yishmael out of the house. He traveled all over the place. He went to Egypt. He went to Gerar. He left his home. He deals with so much bitterness and so much that's difficult. And nothing ages him because he has Sarah. Once Sarah dies, then it's Avraham Zakein. And that's really the message that the Medrash gives, which I thought was... to me, that was a very compelling point. Okay.
I didn't think of that. So he doesn't get married until after the Gita. Like, what if he was going to
then what?
He's going to find
it. That's why it was such a big deal for Avraham, because he didn't have
the
generation.
Yeah, right.
He didn't.
Right. I don't know. It's like my father's mom did that. He goes to the Gita, and then right after, he's like, okay, he's finding a way.
Right. Yeah, and it's not necessarily right after it. It could be 3 years later. Given that we know, I mean, there are certain things that we do know. It's more than 3 years later, first of all. But we do know that there are 3 years from the time Sarah dies until the time Yitzchak gets married. Because Sarah is 127 when she dies, which means Yitzchak is 37 years old, and the Torah is going to tell us he's 40 when he gets married. So, three.
Mm-hmm. Does Yitzchak
Map was my strong suit.
His father is looking for a potential wife? Because Yitzchak is in Shin Be'er. Where's Abraham?
Yitzchak's home at this point.
Oh, he's back home.
He's back at this stage, yeah.
He's in trauma therapy.
Yeah. Yitzchak at some point is back. We don't know when. We don't know where Yitzchak is at the burial of Sarah. He's not mentioned. We have no idea. I'm pretty sure Yishmael didn't show up. That's a safe bet. But we know nothing except that then Yitzchak is suddenly around. Yeah. So Eliezer makes his trip to get a wife. I mentioned it when we did the outline of the parasha quickly. What is the criteria for getting a wife for Yitzchak? What's he supposed to look for? What is that? Avram tells him what to look for. No.
Someone in the family.
Someone in the family. That's what Avram told him, right? Who was it?
Wait, so they were related? How was the...
Yeah, remember the end of Vayera gave us the lineage from Nahor.
How are they related?
Right? Rivka is Nahor's grandson.
Granddaughter,
thank you. Rivka is Nahor's granddaughter. In other words, Nahor and Abraham are brothers. Right? Okay. Nahor and Abraham are brothers. Nahor's kids are Yitzchak's first cousins.
Okay.
So it's his first cousin. Exactly.
And it's Abraham's great niece.
Yes, Abraham's great niece.
My niece married my cousin, so they're like
the
same cousin.
Got it. Okay. There you go.
It's meant to be. You're supposed to
do it. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the way it works.
His great niece.
His great niece.
Use a reference.
Like, I remember anyone
that asked that. Yeah, that's a big deal.
Is it a follow-up suit from Yitzchak and Rivka? I should actually bring it up to
that. Probably should work on it for his next speech.
So, he is told exactly that. He's told, get someone from the family. He should not be marrying anybody local. Right? And Eliezer says, well, maybe she won't follow me. And Avram says, too bad. I don't want you bringing my kid there. Yitzchak has to stay in this land. And you have to get someone from the family to come here to do
it.
Why is he so interested?
Well, he says, if you look at Pasuk Vav, right? Chav Dalet Vav. Abraham says, Hishamer lachav hitashibes b'ni shama. Be careful not to bring my son there. That doesn't quite mean he can't leave the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't say he can't go to Egypt. Except that we know that when there's a famine, he goes south and Hashem says, don't leave. Hashem says, don't go to Egypt. Stay in this land. It's very clear that Hashem wants Yitzchak to be in Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't want him going anywhere. So much so that with Yaakov, Hashem has to tell him, it's okay for you to go to Mitzrayim. Yitzchak should not leave. Yeah.
What is Nahor like? We don't really hear much besides his lineage. Is he a good person? Like, does he follow anything that Abraham does? Does he get car in him a little bit?
We know nothing. Nothing. Yeah.
So he must have some good blood.
Okay.
And what are the options for the wife? Anyone related that's a woman in the family?
Woman from the family of Nahor. If you go back to the end of Vayera, where you had a lineage.
Really the only one?
Well, we don't know. What we do know there is a whole bunch of boys are born to Milcah, and they're listed, and Rivka is mentioned as well. Were there other girls who were not mentioned? Quite possibly.
Right.
Quite possibly.
She's the only one mentioned because we know about her later.
But. Exactly. She's the one who's going to be relevant for us.
But Avram spent so much time, like, teaching so many people about Hashem. I'm saying, like, there could have been someone else. But Yitzchak is interesting that you're...
All the people
and his family were serving with Zara. It wasn't like they were...
So all great. The people who they teach disappear. The whole Nefesh HaShara Subichara and everything. When the family goes down to Mitzrayim, right, Yaakov and the whole crew, we get an enumeration of who's there. There is nobody there who's not a blood relative. Whatever happened there, they don't stick with the family. Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
He wasn't making him because there was no religion yet, but he was just spreading
ideas. Right. He's spreading ideas, and then they go back wherever they are, and hopefully they teach it also.
Yeah. Why is it important to mention the Pulegesh of him as well?
Right. So it's possible that it's because those names are significant if you live in that land. In other words, it mentions Re'uma, right? And she has Tachash and Malcha, right? That group. So it's possible that it's because there are clans that lived in that area who interact with the Jews later. So we find, for example, the Ma'achati, who are presumably descendants of Malcha. That tends to be why.
But would the children of Abihu Lagish be okay for marriage for Yitzchak?
I don't know. It doesn't end up happening, but maybe it could have. I don't know.
I guess Abihu Lagish is okay because he shot him or for production as well, right? Or were they considered
no, right, they become wives. They're actually given as wives in the end. Okay. Yeah. Although, it's funny because the Chumash goes back and forth. Sometimes it calls them Shvachot even later. Like when they meet Esav. Right? It calls them Shvachot. Hena
v'yaldehen. Were they ever called Pulakshim? Or they were just called a maidservant?
Right. They were called Shivcha or they were called wife.
So not Pulakshim is different.
Correct.
But they were.
So it would appear.
They weren't Pulakshim. They were like the maidservant.
Right. They started out as Shvachot and then they became wives.
They were people that served and then they were upgraded to wives.
Yeah. That's what it seems like.
Not married. Pulakshim is not married.
Right.
Right.
So, the problem that I'm trying to get to with this story is that he's supposed to get someone from the family. But that's not what he did. He went to the well, and he said, listen, here's the deal, Hashem. I'm going to ask for water. The one who says, I'm going to give you water and your camel's water, she's the one who is chosen.
Because he knows Aaron was filled with chesed, and maybe it runs in the family. So
that's basically the answer that the Berdichever gives. So Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. But first I want to just make the question even stronger. Take a look at what happens at the well when she gives him the water. In Perek Chav Dalet still, Pasuk Yud Zayin, he runs out to her. Right, he runs out to greet her. He says, give me a little water from the jug. She says, drink. She gets water for him. She finishes giving him, and she says, I'm also going to give your camels in Pasuk Yates. And then in Pasuk Chav, she gives to the camels. Chav Aleph, he's waiting to see, has Hashem made his trip successful? Chav Beis, they finish drinking, and look what he does. He gives her
the nose ring.
Among other things. But yes, the nose ring. That catches the attention. Nose ring and two big gold bracelets.
Before he asks
her, who are you?
Mazel tov already?
That's what it sounds like. No? So you could say, maybe... No, it could be.
Thank you for...
Yeah. Thank you. Here are some bracelets because you gave my camel's water. That could be. But take a look at the Berdichever in source number 6 from Kedushas Levi. He says, "V'hinei Rivka yotzeis asher yulada lebesuel." He notes something else. When Rivka is introduced in the Chumash, in Pasuk Tesvav, it says Rivka was coming out, who was yulada lebesuel. Yulada is a funny word. Who was birthed to besuel. As opposed to Yalda, which is the normal term that we would use, this indicates influence by somebody else. Pshat level, it's because Besuel didn't do any giving birth. Besuel's the guy, right? It's Besuel's wife who actually does this, and we don't even know what her name is.
Aishas
Besuel.
But the term you used before with Yalda, even to match.
Yes.
Yalda.
Correct. You could justify Yalda easily. So the Kedushas Levi though says, I'll tell you why. It's because the influence is not Besuel and his wife. The influence is Abraham. He says, Hashfaos shall Avram avinu alav shalom yulda lebesuel. It was the impact of Avram's influence that caused her to be born to Besuel. Hu haya hagorem avalo Besuel. Avram is the cause, not Besuel. V'lachein akad milas yulda bekubutz. That's why there's an u under the yud. Shemashma'a shemimakom acher ba holadas Rivka v'lo al yedei garmas Besuel. It's because it was caused by something else, not Besuel's influence. In other words, what he's suggesting is that Rivka demonstrates that she's part of the family and the right one for Yitzchak by the fact that she displays traits of Avraham. That shows that she's the right one. To put it differently, Eliezer is not flouting his mission. He knows what his mission is. His mission is get someone from the family of Avraham. But his way to discern the family of Avraham is by looking for the traits of Avraham.
Does she have any contact with Avram, or just the influence of hearing worldwide what Avram stood for?
That's it. Or genetics, whatever you're going to see there, you know, going on in this story. That's what's doing it.
Where did they know? He went to Aram, right?
Yeah, he went back to Aram, way back home. Hopefully not into the furnace, but correct. Okay. And then we get something which is quite controversial, and really I'm sort of opening a can of worms that may not be wise. On the other hand, after my Ask the Rabbi session this morning, I feel like I can... You know, those who were here in the beginning know what I'm talking about. I can deal with this one. We have a principle that's anchored in Pasuk and Parshas Toldos. Perek Chavav, Pasuk Hei. Hashem promises Yitzchak. Right? Hashem says to Yitzchak, stay in the land, don't go down to Mitzrayim. Right? This is in the beginning of Toldos. Or not the very beginning, but towards the beginning of Toldos. It's Perek Chavav. Hashem says, I don't want you going down to Egypt. I want you to stay in Israel. And I'm going to give you many children. All the nations will be blessed by your children. And then he says, Ekev asher shama Avraham bekoli. Why are you going to get all this? Because Avraham listened to my voice. Vayishmor mishmarti. He guarded my mishmeret, that which I told him to guard. Mitzvosai chukosai visorosai. What does that mean? Reading ahead is cheating. What are the mitzvos, chukim, and toros that Abraham kept? We don't, bris milah. What are the mitzvos, chukim, and toros that Abraham is keeping? So the Gemara says, you've heard the idea before. It's source number 7. Amar Rav, kiyem Abraham avinu kol ha-Torah kula. Abraham keeps the entire Torah. Shenamar, as the pasuk says, ekev asher shama Abraham bekoli, since Abraham listened to my voice. And inevitably, when you tell this to people, their first question is, so you're telling me he observed Pesach, even though the kids hadn't even gone down to Mitzrayim, let alone coming out of Mitzrayim. Yeah, he observed Shavuos, even though Matan Torah had not happened. And, you know, so on down the long list of anachronistic mitzvahs. Sorry?
He eats matzah and gives it to the guests because
it's Pesach. Right, but matzah doesn't originate with Pesach.
Oh, no.
That's just...
No, matzah is a flatbread. That's really right. So you find that Yitzias Mitzrayim, you find two different explanations for why they had matzah. One is because they didn't have time for the bread to rise, and the other is because Hashem said to them, "I want you to have Slieshu matzahs al marurim yochlu. You shall eat the Karam Pesach with matzah." And we have that, and then therefore all generations you should eat matzah to remember what they did. But the bottom line is that matzah was not invented for Pesach purposes. It existed outside of that. But that's the idea that's mentioned in the Gemara, and it gives people fits, this idea. You mean they kept all of the different... Not only that, if you read the Gemara there, I didn't bring you the full text, the Gemara says Avram keeps even derabanans, which, you know, is odd. But it also causes problems because there are all sorts of stories in the Torah that seem to run afoul of this, right? Last week, he gave the Malachim milk and meat. Now, you could answer that on many levels.
He gave the dairy first.
He gave the dairy first, and then he gave them the meat afterwards. They were Malachim. You know, he didn't know they were Malachim, but then again, he thought they weren't Jewish.
If he's keeping the Rabbanan...
Right, so Shabbos raises its own questions, because a non-Jew is not supposed to keep Shabbos. So there are actually various articles that were written over the years about this question of how does Avram keep Shabbos? If he's not Jewish, he's not allowed to keep Shabbos. That's true. A non-Jew is not supposed to keep Shabbos. The Chida and others wrote on it. The classic answer is that the way he solved the problem, this is very clever. The way Avram solves the problem is he wears tzitzis.
Yeah, I heard that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if he's Jewish, then there's tzitzis, and it's okay for him to wear them, and he's not violating Shabbos because he's Jewish. If he's not Jewish, on the other hand, then the tzitzis are these extra strings, and you're carrying, and therefore he's violating Shabbos, and therefore he's okay. There are all sorts of answers to how he
can't wear clothes.
Yeah, again, it's a longer discussion in its own right. You're correct, it's attached to the clothing. That doesn't necessarily help. But but it's not just that. It's the problem of how Yaakov is able to marry two sisters. How did he do that?
Well,
the Torah doesn't allow that.
So,
right, that's this weird answer that's why Rachel dies before they get back into Eretz Yisrael, because he marries her outside of Israel and therefore it's okay. The Maharal's answer is that you only take on a mitzvah saseh that you're not obligated in, but you don't take on a lo saseh that you're not obligated in. His thought is that lo saseh is prohibitions, evidence, yira. That's awe of God, reverence. And there, you don't take on an additional thing to be reverential. It's only if Hashem says, I don't like this, then you say, oh, then I'm not going to do it. Whereas a mitzvah asay, that demonstrates love, like I'm doing something for Hashem, and you could take on extra mitzvah asay. That's the Maharal's approach.
Didn't know that was a Gemara. I thought this was like a Medrash.
Well, Medrash, I mean, Gemara is filled with Medrash. Medrash Halacha and Medrash Haggadah.
Has more weight, doesn't it?
If a medrash makes it into Gemara and interfaces somehow with halacha, then it will carry more weight because it's given that by the Gemara, but medrash has its own authority. It stands on its own, really.
The medrash, you don't have to put it literally.
The midrashim that are in the Gemara, the Medrash Haggadah, are also often not explained literally. Yeah. So, wait, I mention it here because the Meshech Chachma brings a few examples of this idea that it interact with our with what we're discussing. One, which one did I choose here? Oh, I brought Lavan here. The pasuk says it's in Chaf Dalad Lama Gimel. Vayusam lefanav le'echol. Food was placed before Eliezer to eat, which is a very strange thing to say. When you realize that with everything else, it says, Lavan did this, Lavan did this, Lavan did that. Right? He welcomes him in. He says, I've cleaned out the house myself. He gives fodder to the animals. He brings water for them to bathe. And then food is placed in front of Eliezer. So the Meshech Chachma says, yeah. Food was placed in front of Eliezer because Lavan knew that they keep kosher in Avram's household and he didn't know what they could eat and couldn't eat, so therefore he let them take care of their own food. Because, again, they're keeping kosher at this stage. Similarly, there's a gap. I just want to see how much time we have. That's the answer. It's 11:30. Huh. All right, so we're going to have to start with this next time. We have to start with this next time. It's okay, because it comes from the pasuk in the beginning of Toldos, so we have a cliffhanger. To talk a little bit more about this idea of getting the Torah at that point, and then, yeah. And then we'll pick up with Toldos. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.